ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with your boys, Corbin Middlemass and Ed Cowan for your Monday. What a week in the cricket sphere. Just as we thought things might have been just quietening down a little bit, and we've got the Sheffield Shield final around the corner, New South Wales have found themselves a new senior men's coach. Who'd have thought? Cam Green versus Tom Decent in the article in the SMH. We'll cover off on all of that as well. There's a whole lot to chop up. My name's Corbin Middlemass in Melbourne, and Ed Cowan, Mr. Worldwide, is in the capital of the world in New York City, one of our favourite places that you and I share in common, and yet only 50% of us are actually there with feet on the ground. Teddy, how are you today on this, what for me is a beautiful Monday, for you is probably still Sunday?
Late Sunday night. Spring has sprung, Corb. Oh. Guess who I saw today?
Aaron Judge.
Steve Smith.
Oi. Yeah, that should have been my first
guess. I'm just joking.
should have been my first guess. Down in West Village.
He was in gag. He was musing how disappointed he was he didn't get to play the last couple of Shield rounds.
Yeah.
I said, oh, man, it's tough. It's tough around here.
How is it? It's a beautiful time of the year to be in New York, I'm sure.
Bitterly cold for a couple of days. Ooh. Last couple of days has been A1. Nice. This is a city. Honestly, when are we coming here and starting some kind of sports broadcast?
Just you and me. Don't tempt me. How good would that be? It's honestly, I know people either feel like they have sort of one feeling or the other. Either you're 100% all in, greatest city in the world, or you're the other way. I can't relate at all with people that are the other way. But it's what a place it is. And if you haven't been there, it's bucket list material, isn't it? What a place. What a part of the world. Home to MI New York, of course. That's what it's...
The great cricket team of MI New York. You're right. And all those home games the fans go crazy for.
Yeah.
I mean, they only have to travel to Dallas, Texas to watch them. But hey,
yep,
we're in on that.
Yeah, good. And then there's a few other teams that play there as well that that pull a crowd as well. Listener feedback. We mentioned last week the ABC email is up and running, so that's very exciting. ABC Cricket Podcast, that's the email address, at abc.net.au. So ABC Cricket Podcast at abc.net.au.
It's not Corbin and Ted's Terrific Adventures?
No, it's not. I know you were hoping for something a little bit offbeat. It's also in the show notes in case you didn't get that on the run. So there you go. I got one, though, in the old school medium, which we're moving away from, by the way. So for anyone from here on in that tries to get in touch with us through LinkedIn or through Instagram, that they might have a few issues. But Dallas did hit me up in the middle of the summer, and I said, no worries, Dallas, I'll put it on the show this week. Sure enough, never did. He said, hey, Corb, have loved the pod since the beginning with Teddy. Thanks for extending it into the full calendar year this year. Two questions for Teddy, because I don't want to clog up his LinkedIn. One, I love hearing his batting analysis. Does he put it into practice with any mentoring or coaching at grade or development level?
Interesting. I love talking cricket one-on-one with passionate young cricketers. So occasionally I will do sessions, and ranging from my little nephew, 12, who is a great little left-handed batsman, and he loves it. I love coaching him, right through to occasionally, you know, full-time professional cricketers in state squads where you can, you know, get into the nitty-gritty of, hey, I'm really struggling with right arm round the wicket. How do you line someone up who's trying to take the ball away from you from round the wicket and really, you know, refine something that can make a difference? What I'm not great at and I don't really enjoy is throwing lots of balls for the sake of practice. It's like, problem, how can I help batters, specifically left-handers, because I think the game is very... different for right and left-handed batters in many respects. How can they solve a specific problem? And you turn up and you do it for half an hour or 40 minutes and they go away and feel great that you've kind of cracked a nut. So I love that. I'd love to do more of it. I'd love to give more time to it.
Second part of the question was, does he still net or get the urge to net himself?
I don't. But I did. I mean, I did play a game at the SCG this year and hit a couple out of the middle and thought, oh, that's a feeling.
Still got it.
That is a feel. There was a big six there, Corb, a couple rows back.
Don't worry.
Part of the boundary.
Don't worry. I saw the videos hit their group chat, so don't worry about that.
I'll play some more cricket at some point, but I'll probably need to do some practice. You're right.
Thanks, Dallas. Appreciate that. And plenty of emails coming through. We got a couple in particular, one from Johnny in Maroubra, talking about Sam Elliott and what Teddy makes of his game. Of course, the son of Matthew Elliott. Fair to say, very different style player than what his old man was, as opposed to a sort of opening batsman to now all of a sudden be one of the most dominant strike bowlers in Shield cricket. So his question really centres around, and this is a good segue for us to get into the Shield final, which starts on Thursday. You can hear every ball, by the way, through the ABC Listen app. So ABC Listen, red cricket ball button's the place to find it, every single ball from Thursday onwards. It's been an incredible year. 32 wickets for Mitch Perry, 7th on the wicket takers list. Sam Elliott's taken 33 wickets. He's 4th. Yet it feels like, Teddy, there's only going to be room for one of them in the lineup to partner. Todd Murphy is the spinner, and clearly the dominant combination of Fergus O'Neill, who'll come back in, and Scott Boland. Which way does Chris Rogers and his team go?
Sorry, and Will Sutherland, of course, who is the fast bowling all-rounder, so they end up with 4 fast bowlers and a spinner. I mean, an embarrassment of riches, really. Which way do they go? I have no idea which way they'll go, but this is kind of how I would dissect it. So Sam Elliott's burst onto the scene and has done tremendously well. It's a toss of the coin, really, in terms of performance, 34, 33 wickets. Both are outstanding. I personally, this is my only view, Sam Elliott has more chance of playing for Australia than Mitch Perry. Very talented bowler, Mitch Perry, moves the ball both ways. Is it a brisk pace? Probably not a brisk pace. It's fast medium. You can see Sam Elliott with his build and his skill actually going to the next level and being a very good test cricketer. So I would probably lean that way and say it's one more game, one big game for a kid to get in and do well. And if Sam Elliott does well in the Shield final, all of us, we know for a fact that is as close to domestic cricket, and how close it can get to the pressure of test cricket. Mm. And we've seen in the past, you get 100 in the Shield final, or 5 wickets, you're on the radar. And so I don't think Mitch Perry's 5 for if he took in the Shield final would put him on the radar. I think it definitely would for Sam Elliott. So it's a toss of the coin. I think they'd both do a great job. They're both excellent, excellent cricketers. That's probably how I would try and frame it up.
It's a great way to break it down. The more I look at this, the more I study the two teams, everything that's baked into it, the more I like the Vics here. I know we sort of talked about it a couple of weeks out, but the comparison battle, Teddy, which we love to do, Mackenzie Harvey and Henry Hunt, or Campbell Calloway and Sam Harper, which openers are you taking?
Victorians.
All right, the middle order, so McSweeney, Sanger, Carey, Lehman. Pretty good four. McSweeney, Sanger, Carey, Lehman.
Beat that, I say, yeah.
Or Dylan Brasher, Pete Hanscom, Marcus Harris, and Ollie Peake.
No, I'm taking the Sackers. This is actually where I think they might win the game.
All right. Liam Scott or Will Sutherland?
Will Sutherland.
Yep, so it's 2 ticks for the Vics. The the spinner, Ben Benenti or Todd Murphy?
Absolute no-brainer. Next.
I'm putting you down for Todd Murphy. And then the pace trio. So we've got McAndrew, Thornton, Buckingham. Again, nothing wrong with the South Australian trio, but they're coming up against, in your team, Elliott, Boland, O'Neill.
I mean, definitely 2 turns stronger on the fast bowling. But I mean, both very good domestic teams. This is a proper Shield final.
It's a great final.
Probably the first one for a while where you've thought the second place team could really shake this out. I'm 60-40 Victoria, but I think, you know, Sanger 100, Carey 100, that I don't see many runs in the Victorian team. I think they're a 250 team, and if South Australia are a 400 team, they've got the firepower to roll the Vics again. And so
problem is Boland's taking wickets at 14. So <It's>
I mean, he's world class. He's top 10 bowler in the world. So, look, as I said, 60-40 for the Vics. I think the only team that could beat them, funnily enough, is the team that's playing them.
Yeah, it's a fun final. Victoria.
And they have momentum.
Yeah.
And they got momentum.
So Interestingly, South Australia's only two losses were their first two games of the year, which means they haven't lost a game since mid-October in the Shield. They've got 4 wins, 4 draws. Victoria, though, create a bit of history. They've become just the 5th team in Sheffield Shield history to win 7 games or more in a season. So they finished with 7 wins to go along with 2 losses and 1 draw. So in the this is the perfect final. The defending champs up against the best team all year and one of the best teams that we've seen in the regular season in the Sheffield Shield's history. South Australia, as we said, lost those 2 games, 1 to Victoria, 1 to Queensland, but the last of those ended on the 18th of October. The rest of the competition, by the way, given both South Australia and Victoria lost only 2 games, every other team had 4 or more losses, so there's no surprise that we've got these two teams in the final. South Australia looking to win consecutive titles for the first time in their history, so they've never gone back-to-back previously. The Vics hosting the Shield final for the first time since 2018-19. And this is where Chris Rogers deserves a lot of credit. There's been heavy change in that time. So only Harris and Boland are the only two that remain from that team. And that's, it's 8 years ago, which, you know, there'd be a lot of other teams that would have you know, more members hanging over in that span than what the Vics do. The weather here has been sensational, Teddy. It's been 30 yesterday, 25 today, 30 tomorrow. Problem is, game doesn't start till Thursday. And the forecast there reads showers at 19, day 2, showers easing 15, shower or 2 day 3, 18, and then partly cloudy 21 for day 4. So Melbourne weather not really
doesn't
playing
sound
its
like
part.
Great batting conditions, do they? There, no. When you're an opening batter and it's rain clearing in 15, you're thinking, oh, goodness. One question on my mind, if Victoria do win,
mm-hmm.
is the whole city going to storm...
No doubt.
Junction Oval. I can imagine it's going to be such a big sporting event for Melbourne this week that there might be 120,000 people storm. They're going to have Pete Hanscom on their shoulder screaming, VCA, VCA. And we're going to see wild scenes at the Junction Oval. Is that right?
We can't have small market teams win every year, Teddy. Every now and then the New York Yankees come to town and that's what happens. That they flex their muscle, and that's what the Victorian boys have done in this campaign. So good luck to the Vics and the
Suckers. Will it make
the
paper? If they win, are the local papers going to cover it?
In
yes or no?
In the shorts maybe, in a little bit.
they'll kick out some drink driving charge from a VFL substitute player who, you know, had too many beers on a Saturday night.
Ball-by-ball coverage available through ABC Listen. Look out for the red cricket ball button. It all starts on Thursday. So what a fun final. We'll be into it. I know that for sure, Teddy.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to stream it from NYC. Don't you worry.
We're talking about runs last week. Rick Finlay was all over it on X, as it is now. Pete Hanscom, 688 runs as the top run scorer in the competition. The lowest tally for a leading run scorer in the Sheffield Shield since... 1972-73, when Doug Walters top scored in the competition with 654 runs. That is the lowest leading run scorer tally in 53 years.
That's a great stat, isn't it? Oh. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago now. You know, the combination of probably three things. One, the Kookaburra ball, proud to see him. Two, the wickets are not more conducive in pockets, they're more conducive across the board. You know, historically, the Gabba and Belrive were probably hard to bat at. Adelaide Oval was a road. Wacker was hard for a day. SCG was hard for a day, but, you know, great to bat. Aside from Cricket Central, basically every ground is bowler-friendly all game. And so runs are at a premium. Does that end? I think it's... there's more weight in the players' minds around T20 and franchise cricket and the opportunities there. And so the put that all in the pot and stir around a little bit and you get 650 seasons, not 1,100 runs. So it makes for grim reading. It's hard to read too much into it. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I need a longer sample size. So if this is a trend over the next couple of years, so it's certainly on watch. Big time.
It's been a long time since 1,000 runs got cracked.
Yep.
So I think the trend is definitely down. I don't know whether we've seen the bottom trough and we'll tick back up to an 850, 900 season, which I think is still that's a great season. Forget the 1,000 benchmark.
It's in line with world cricket though, isn't it? Like if you looked at the test numbers over the last...
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. 10 years or whatever it turns out to be. So maybe that's just the modern game, as we keep getting told. I heard you mention Cricket Central and all of that, Teddy, and my listeners just pricked up a little bit, and I thought, hang on, Cricket Central, there's a pretty big event that happened there during the week, and that was Brad Haddin being announced as the new senior coach of New South Wales men's team. I floated it to you on the pod last week, and you said, look, nothing to see here, not sure, batted it away, which all I can assume is Tuesday must have been so busy last week. Like, we spoke on Monday. Tuesday must have gone through a whole round of interviews. All of a sudden, then Brad Haddin's appointed on Wednesday as the coach. So, man, first of all, like, I feel for you. Tuesday, you would have been flat out on Zoom calls from over in the US and everything. But you got it done. Well done.
Yeah, well, it's a... that's a stitch up. I mean, I think what it says is I value my role as a board member and the confidentiality to which you must be held on important issues over and above my public service as a podcaster and how much I love this.
We understand. I mean, the juicy bit here that's the interesting talking point is the Fox Cricket article. So Fox Cricket understands a former Australian wicketkeeper, Brad Haddin, a leading candidate to replace Shippen next summer, presented to the Cricket New South Wales board for the coaching gig at Silver Waters Cricket Central on Monday evening, upstairs from where the Blues were playing in a Sheffield Shield match against WA. Now, according to a source speaking on the condition of anonymity, Shippen walked past the room's glass panel holding the Dean Jones Trophy on multiple occasions during Haddin's presentation. He was also seen entering the New South Wales change room with the trophy on Tuesday morning, his final day in charge of the Blues. Now, we sort of then found out through Steve O'Keefe, who was speaking on his radio spot on SEN, where he basically said, hey, the assistant coaches were told on the morning of day four, the final day, that, hey, they won't be there next year. And then the new brigade's coming through, and Haddin will bring his people, understandably, with him as the new coach of New South Wales. Were you part of that board meeting? Did you see Greg Shippard sort of come walking past? Was it noted at any stage as to what was going on there?
Well, a reminder, when we spoke last Monday,
yep,
where was I? I was in Canada.
Yeah. So you didn't dial in the middle of the night or anything like that?
I couldn't see Greg Shippard walking past with trophies, which...
But if someone said someone would say in the board meeting, hey, Shippy's outside carrying the trophy.
You're beating me to the punchline. I'm unsure the source who's speaking on a condition of anonymity actually knows anything, because all the sources I spoke to didn't see it, didn't happen. So I don't know. I asked multiple people and no one saw that, for the record.
Right. Okay.
Look, I think we're in clickbait kind of territory here.
Very credible journalist.
What I do know is Greg Shippard did a great job to pick New South Wales off the canvas in a team that was culturally struggling, in a team that hadn't performed anywhere near what they should have, and really laid the foundations for the next stage of growth for a heap of young players. But I also do believe that Brad is the right person to take the team forward from a good team that won, realistically, let's just pull our heads together for a moment, the least of the most important three trophies that is played in domestic cricket. It is a sidebar. It's nice to win, but it is a sidebar. 7-game season of 50-over cricket in a format that is essentially dead. So the Shield team, won 2 games?
Yeah. He's...
Missed out on driving home wins in multiple games because the style of play was way too negative. And the Big Bash, have done a great job over a long period of time, but from all reports, that team was being definitely held together by other people.
So I'm a Brad Haddin guy. I think he'll be an excellent appointment for New South Wales. So all of that's absolutely, I agree with you on that front. But isn't the concern here, though, that the way that this has been handled, and clearly Greg Shippard's unhappy with the way that it's finished, he's not chuffed about it, the fact that these reports get out and he's carrying around the trophy and everything else, he's a players guy. So he's got the players on his side. So you would have to know, as a member of the New South Wales Cricket Board, that you're saying, hey, we're making this change because we think this is the best thing for the playing group and for Cricket New South Wales going forward. But you have to be alert, don't you, where you think, what's this done to our culture? Is there a worry here that with the new coach coming in, that we've made this hard for him in the way that we've handled it, that immediately the players have got a little bit of shit on their liver straight away based off what's happened?
Well, first of all, the thing I'd say, do you know that the players are unhappy that Brad's been appointed, or are some relieved? Maybe some are relieved that the style of play might change, that he hadn't connected with them in a way because the age gap had got too big and his coaching methods had probably dated. Do you know that?
All I'm going by is what
you're going on is what Steve O'Keefe, who retired 4 years ago, is saying and, you know, espousing on his radio show. So I think what will happen is, and I know for a fact, when I was playing and there's a coach change, guess what?
Everyone starts from zero.
Everyone's pretty happy to try and please the new coach. Everyone is, because the last coach doesn't pay your wages.
No.
And if you're, when your contract comes up and you're still going, geez, I wish the old coach was coaching me, mate, too late. So it's players, they should be sad. This is someone who's poured their heart and soul into the team and into their careers and been a great fatherly figure to many, so they should be sad. But when they turn up to day one of training, I know for a fact, as a player, your attention goes straight to making the best of the situation you have with the new coach.
Is there a better way we could have handled the assistant coaches learning that they wouldn't be there next year?
Well, I think, just taking a step back, I think if you had your time again, I think you'd do lots of things maybe differently, but you can only deal with the information you have, and you know, there are trade-offs for every decision you make. So maybe you'd have to ask the CEO. I think it's, once you have a new coach, I think most assistants assume that their job goes back in the mix of, and many of those will keep working at Cricket New South Wales. So it's not, hey, you're out the door, and maybe the report missed this. Some of them, no doubt, will still be employed at Cricket New South Wales. Some won't, but some will. They might be in different roles. They might be in similar roles. I don't know.
When are we expecting an announcement on the Big Bash teams? And is that like...
Which bit of the Big Bash teams?
Well, it sounds to me like James Hope's going to be the coach of the Sydney Sixers. That's been reported by just about every sort of media outlet, particularly from coming from north of the Murray, from New South Wales and Queensland, where he has links. So I get the feeling that James Hope's going to be announced at some stage in the not-too-distant future. Is there an announcement pending on that front?
I don't know if there's an announcement pending on either Big Bash team.
Well, here's the other one I'm happy to throw in.
All I know is that that both coaches have been pretty close. I don't know. I don't know where the terms are at.
Is Haddon,
I'm not telling you, and I'm not telling you who they are.
Haddon's not coaching either of the teams. Can you tell me that?
I don't think that's for me to. Comment.
I don't think that he will, for whatever that's worth. And again, this is how well this is going, you telling me any kind of information. So you can take this all on for whatever it's worth. The other name I'll throw into the mix when it comes to the Sydney Thunder, my understanding is that Mike Hussey is very deep in this process. So I would go as far as to say I think he's the favourite for the Sydney Thunder role. I know there's been a bunch of other names that have been put forward, but I think if I was guessing right now, I would expect that James Hopes will be the next coach of the Sydney Sixers and Mike Hussey will be the next coach of the Sydney Thunder. So...
How do you react to those names out of interest?
Well, I think that's, if you were to say, hey, we're bringing in James Hopes, Mike Hussey and Brad Haddon to head up Cricket New South Wales, high-performance men's programs, basically, and run the show, I think they're internationally renowned coaches for a reason. There's a reason those guys' services are so highly sought after in places like the IPL, which is basically the global meeting point of, cricket. And those guys have worked in it their whole lives. So, I think they're really nice appointments if it pans out that way. But I could ask you, but I take it you're not going to confirm or deny any of that.
No, I'll pass that feedback on to those that make the decision.
No, I appreciate you answering some of those questions coming out of it, because I understand you can't talk to me about it in advance. But certainly on the other side of it, I appreciate you answering some of the questions.
No problem, Corb. I think, and we for regular listeners, sorry to bore you, but for new listeners, I'm always happy to answer those hard questions, because we expect people around the Australian cricket team, be it players, physios, whoever, to be accountable for their decisions. And, they're reasonable questions to ask, and you're asking them in a very reasonable fashion. So the least I can do is answer them.
Beautiful segues, game. Speaking of Cricket Central, there was also a meeting between Tom Deason, who's one of the most respected cricket journos going around in the country, and Cam Green, of course, who's really the face of Australian cricket for the next decade, you would think. Scored his first 100 in any format since August with 135 on day two. Now, the article mentions that media were invited out to Cricket New South Wales headquarters on Monday to interview him. Now, journos waited for play to end, got word at 6:15 that he'd refused to do the interview. Now, clearly, this is a quote from the article. Clearly, Green has been allowed to choose when it suits him to talk. After about 10 minutes, I'm told I can chat to Green after all, but only for 2 minutes, and it's only about the Shield match. The inference is that his Ashes campaign, 171 runs at 24, T20 World Cup campaign where he scored 24 runs at 8, an apology to Pakistan spinner Usman Tariq after appearing to accuse him of chucking in a post-wicket display to teammates, are all off limits. Tom goes on to say, I gently asked how the preceding period in which he struggled for runs has been. It must have been different to what he's used to. I'm not answering that question. Green spits back. Next question. Recognising that continuing the interview would be futile, I decided to end it after just 20 seconds. Waste of time, Green mutters as he storms off. I tell him that our version of a waste of time are different, given I've waited all afternoon to speak to him after being invited out to Western Sydney. To my surprise, Green walks back, clearly emotional, asks why I'm out to get him. Bo Casson, who's obviously now the coach of WA Cricket, comes over to apologise as Green strides towards the car park. Pete Lawler referenced this too in his Cricket at All article, where he basically said it's not a surprise to those of us that have witnessed an Australian cricket dressing room increasingly sensitive to criticism. What did you make of this and the fact that Tom decided to write his version of events, which he's entitled to, and to how the exchange played out with Cam Green?
So, I mean, this is the second time this season that Tom, I think, has excelled at his job as a journalist, because it is way too easy for journalists, given how few they are and how access can be denied and the power dynamic, to become sycophants for the Australian team and cricket in Australia more broadly. And there are a few in the press corps who that's how they operate. So you've got to remind yourself, Tom, earlier in the season, wrote about his interaction with Usman.
That's right.
That I thought was perfectly balanced. And this, again, was, I thought, a perfectly balanced view. Would Tom behave any differently? I don't think so. It sounds pretty reasonable, waiting 4 hours to talk to a cricketer. Sounds like, you know, maybe he was a little bit ticked off by that stage and could have been a little bit more empathetic, but at the same time, I think Cam will
so Lawler, look back at, just on
at
that.
Some time. Yeah, sorry.
So Lawler clarifies in his piece that Tom actually sought out, even after this, before he hit publish on the story, to say, hey, is there anything I'm not aware of? Like, is there some kind of a personal issue happening, basically, like trying to get a backstory with Cam as to, you know, is his mental health not well? Is he in a bad spot? Whatever it turns out to be. And essentially, they were told, nope, that's just the way that it was handled. And so, I mean, you can't do more than that, can you, as a journalist, to basically say, hey, this was my experience. I'm trying to look after the player's welfare, but this is what we're getting. What other choice are you possibly left with?
No, I agree. And he dealt with it particularly well. As I was about to say, I think Cam will reflect on this, maybe not in the short term, but as he grows older and matures, that the last 6 months he hasn't really wrapped himself in much glory, you know, between this and the chucking incident that you alluded to. So, you know, part of the job, unfortunately, is you get paid a lot of money. You are at the center of a lot of attention. If that's not for you, you've got a couple of options. One is you just cop it on the chin and fast forward, you put your head in the sand, or you actually deal with it with humility and you say, my ears are open. No journalist ever, it does feel like it. I've been at the center of that. It feels like they are out to get you. Guess what? They are not. They are doing their job. Some do it a lot better than others. And Tom Deason is someone who knows cricket. He played cricket. He tours. He's not a part-time summer hack who just turns up and espouses a view that probably happened a bit too much back in the day, but we've now got, he's a hardcore cricket writer now. And so if I was a player, I'd actually be curious as to his view. What are you seeing? How do you know, you can turn it around and you know, be a bit more of a meerkat and understand, you know, what the other view is. I mean, Cam, I'm a fan of his cricket. He's always been a lovely human in my interactions. You don't know what's going on, but it does feel like cracks are emerging, unfortunately, and hopefully they can they can not just get papered up, but get the cellies out and get filled in.
I interviewed Cam after the Boxing Day test and asked him all the questions that I've had to ask him about, you know, how he's, maybe we can put it at the end of this interview or we can find it. But basically, he handled him extremely well. Like in terms of, and I asked him about, you know, it's, you've got an unusual record, you've scored runs away, you haven't scored runs at home. Usually it's the other way around for young developing batsmen, and he had an answer for it, and he was very respectful. So I was stunned to sort of hear that that had played out in the fashion that it did. Absolutely agree with you in terms of, you know, journo's been out to get players. Like the thing the players, I feel like, never understand is these guys write their own story. Like all we do is basically commentate on what they've done. So again, what do you reckon the article's like when we talk about Steve Smith, or if he retired tomorrow, what the reflection would be on his career? Like everybody would say, how great was that? How blessed were we to watch Steve Smith play, or whatever it turns out to be? So that the guys write their own story every single weekend. I think that, and you've dealt with it clearly as a former player from, you know, Cam's perspective and what he's dealing with and as a player and everything else. This to me is that this is a much broader organisation thing. And I, yeah, it reminded me a lot of the episode with Stuart Clarke, where he obviously expressed an opinion pre-play. And basically the team's response to that was, hey, we're going to ban the ABC from doing the interviews. And we're in a similar position to probably what Tom was here, where we thought, well, we got one or two options. Either we just cop it on the chin, or essentially we say exactly what happened, which is all we can do. We can say, hey, we ordinarily have a player interview. We haven't got one tonight because the team decided not to do it. And then obviously the volcano erupted and everything panned out from that point on. But when you talk to people in and around Cricket Australia at this, they will quickly come back to you and say, hey, what are we meant to do? The team doesn't want to do it. The team doesn't want to do it. And this is basically, and we've spoken about the bubble that's been created around the playing group for a period of time, and as Pete says, you know, increasingly sensitive to criticism. At what point does it get to that the organisation actually takes charge of this back, that, you know, from Todd Greenberg down and the people that run the media department more broadly to essentially say, hey, we don't like the way that this is headed. We need to get a better relationship between the press and the playing group. And so we need to chat to the people that are running the dressing room, from, you know, the coach, the captain and everyone else, and explain to them, hey, this is what they're trying to do. This is what we're trying to do. We're actually all pretty much headed in the same direction. And yet it feels like we're fighting separate battles at the moment. That the organisation has control of that, and yet they discuss it as if it's a way where it's like, what are we meant to do? Like, well, we don't have any control over that. Like, surely they've got control over that. It's their team.
Yeah, and they pay the contracts. And it probably segues a little bit into the next topic as well. But if you think about the value of media rights in Australia, I think we all agree that we don't tell the best stories. We provide great content in terms of the cricket on the field. But when you talk media rights deals, you need to look around the periphery content, the periphery IP that's created, the personalities, how they're engaging with the wider audience. And so, in actual fact, it does harm long-term to Cam Green's back pocket. So cricket needs to be better at incentivizing players on the flip side so that they can share in the upside of a media uplift, rather than thinking the world's against them, I'll get my pay and I'll go home.
Yeah. Now
there's a betterment of the game at stake, not just, you got to kind of widen your vision a little bit more periphery.
But now more than ever, you know, these guys are largely independent contractors that all come together to play for one team. Like, what's your personal brand look like? It's I don't know, even sell it to them from that perspective. Speaking of where the game's going and what it looks like and player power and everything else, the push towards privatisation, or perhaps stalling on the way towards privatisation. We were told end of March, first quarter of the year. I noticed some reports coming out during the week that has actually been now pushed into April. So we're expecting a decision next month as to whether the game will go down that path or not. Todd Greenberg's continued along a similar line where he basically says, hey, the impact of saying no are potentially as big as the impact of saying yes, talking about whether they pursue privatisation or not. And there was an article by Dan Bredig, which was a sort of similar conversation that we'd had here a couple of weeks ago about betting dollars. So the headline reads, sell off the BBL or sell out to sports betting, cricket's huge call, talking about the fact that this has been discussed at board level. That's what Dan Bredig reported. The AFL and the NRL scoop up about $40 to $50 million per year through betting revenue. Cricket Australia's revenue currently sits at around $15 million. So as much as, what's that, $35 million shy of those other major domestic sports. The WBBL and the BBL have been exempt in the past from gambling advertising. There's also the question that's been raised about, you know, what the government's going to do about this. Well, that Peter Murphy report's been sitting in front of the government for about 1,000 days and nothing's happened so far. Where are you on this, Teddy? What's the latest, on your lens, I guess, on whether the game will go down the privatisation route or not?
Okay. I'll pick this off in kind of different strands. Let me just collect my thoughts, even though it's late on a Sunday night. So let's go back a step, and then I'll go to your question specifically around the betting. So, you know, the big conversation at the moment, and it's been reported, so I don't feel bad. And again, I will try and maintain all confidentiality of, and I'll probably work in round numbers, so I'll just give a little bit of context there. Is the threat, you know, the strategic threat of multi-contracts by IPL teams who own many teams around the world offering a multi-club contract to our best players to go play for them rather than play in the Big Bash. And that's really being pushed quite hard, and particularly the threat of the SA20 becoming, you know, the January major event. So you have, let's say, Steve Smith and Dave Warner and Pat Cummins choose to play in South Africa instead of Australia, and then the Indian owners can not just have the South African players, but if, you know, whoever the English player is, the players around, they then get shipped in and you can build a big tournament. So a couple of things to say against that strategic rationale before we kind of move along to where we're at. I think it's a total furphy, and it's being used incorrectly. And when you think about why, there are a couple of reasons. One is it might work for either your up-and-coming star, like your Devold Brevis, who, you know, was probably the first multi-club contracted player, or your middling player who's played a bit of international cricket but isn't really a star. And you can, you know, maybe there's some risk on a Jake Fraser-McGurk, for instance. But is there a risk of Pat Cummins or Travis Head signing one of these? Absolutely not. Because they have no... So as soon as you do that, you're right out of the control of the unions. You have no player power. You have no flexibility. You can be contracts. And it's happened already to a significant Australian player in an Indian-owned team in the 100. Contract was reneged on. We will re-sign you for X amount. And then they decided not to and just didn't put the paperwork in, because it was at their whim. So if you are one of the best players in the world, would you like both a lack of flexibility and no protection?
It doesn't. You may as well be, if you're going to be held to those principles, you may as well play for your national body. Like that's essentially what we're saying, that
absolutely
it's the same restriction. Then, so the idea of getting away from the national contract is to give you more freedom, not less.
And absolutely. And secondly, the SA20, you know, if you do the actual numbers, the TV rights are de minimis compared to the Big Bash. The Indian teams are strategically using it as a feeder. They're not interested in sending their Indian players. And so it's like a little offset. What happens in the NBA, like your summer camp or whatever?
Yeah, you know, G League.
It's like it's the AAAs to the major leagues. They don't care. It's strategically important for them, not for the SA20. They needed the money. So let's just debunk that as a strategic rationale. What we can agree on, just to move along here and chime in, because I feel like I'm already doing a lot of talking, is the big, and we've said all along, as in you and I have said, not just, you know, the states, the Big Bash needs not necessarily a reset, but needs to improve the quality of the cricket to attract greater media rights for the betterment of Australian cricket, not to the detriment of the Australian Test team. So if you use that as a framework, what does better cricket look like? It means better players. How do you get better players? You pay them more. And so we talked for the last couple of weeks about paying your best players more and the worst players less, because the dispersion is wrong, and you get the best international players available by paying them more money so they don't go either to South Africa or to the IL 10 or 20. So that is possible by doing a range of things that we can come to the detriment of Australian cricket. So do you think that Indian owners of the Big Bash team's care for the Australian Test team and producing Australian Test players or any other domestic player pathway?
Of course not.
Of course not. So that's an easy solve. And so you let the fox into the hen house. And that doesn't mean that privatisation is a bad thing. It depends on who your owners are and what controls and powers and what they have. At the moment, the thought is that IPL owners will pay the highest price. That may well be true for the record. Mm-hmm. But are we in price maximisation mode? Why aren't we thinking about what is... You can still balance. Let's find a way to pay the players more and potentially how. So the question is how, and a few things have been going on. Well, one thing, how, is increase the revenues of Cricket Australia that have been essentially flat, ex-media rights for some time. How can you do that? And this is to answer the direct question that you positioned.
Mm.
And I think Dan Bredig's numbers are wrong from my understanding, but let's use those numbers, not to reiterate them, but I think they're in both directions.
They're in the neighbourhood?
They're in the neighbourhood, but I think the delta gets bigger. I think it's less than NRL and AFL's more.
Yeah, well,
is there a world where cricket over the next 5 years could be in line with the AFL and the NRL, and it would take some time, but you know, when you talk about both product fees and commission, you know, things that cricket don't do, they already have betting. Bet365 is a major sponsor of the test team. You see the little triangles. So it's already there, but they're half pregnant. So if that's possible, guess what? Your player payment pool expands.
Are you happy with that, though? Are you happy to see more gambling owners?
Me personally?
Yeah.
What I would like is the discussion. Would we prefer to sell our future to the Indian Premier League teams or allow for more betting? So I don't bet on sport.
Yep.
I don't love it. But would I prefer that to the game being decimated in the future and having no control of key assets?
Yeah.
Absolutely, I would.
What I don't know, here's just a question. You know, this isn't my area.
Sure. And I've got a few more things to add. Gotcha. So ask a question, and then we'll get back to a few things.
Felt like we learned a lot about this at the start of the summer, right? It had been bubbling away in the background, but then it had been, hey, Cricket Australia is going to have a serious conversation when it comes to privatisation. Nothing really moves through the Christmas period, you know, focuses on, you know, the home summer and the Ashes and everything else. Then it's like, hey, conversation is going to ramp up. We're going to make a decision by the end of the first quarter. And now all these things are on the table, and all we keep hearing from Todd is very much like, you know, if we say no, it's as big as if we say yes. And he's pushed that line out a lot across, you know, various different platforms.
I think that is true. Like, but this is the biggest strategic decision
that
Cricket Australia can and the States can make.
So why is it under such a time crunch? That's what I don't understand. Like, why don't
that's
we work out?
I can't answer.
Why don't
that.
We work out all the answers? And if it gets to August and we work it out, then fine. Why does it have to be decided
August, by August 27 or August 28th?
Yeah. So, like, why does it have to be done right now,
Corbyn? That's a little bit of common sense. So the thing, why they are pushing, they're saying, oh, prices have never been higher for these assets. If we don't do it now, they'll spend their money elsewhere. Both are absolute falsehoods. So one, these are scarce assets. They're of quality, they are very scarce to the point that really the Big Bash is the only one left. And so actually making them wait a while, despite where global prices are and what, you know, other comp transactions, they're not going anywhere. And so I do this for a living. So I feel pretty well positioned to say that. And unfortunately, there are no investors on the Cricket Australia board. So that is fact. And you know what? Guess the incentive for the bankers who are advising them is to always do a deal. And so you'll tell your client that, you know, the money might go away. So on top of that, you know, part of the plan is for New Zealand expansion. It is my understanding, and I've heard from a few people across the ditch, that that is not going to happen, and they are going to go their own way with their own private league. So that's actually great. Why wouldn't you then keep your asset? It's now even more scarce. And so at the right time, when you have all the pieces in place, you can privatise down the line once all this is solved. The other big thing they have to solve is the MOU because it's totally broken. It's broken the system as it relates to the Big Bash. So until that's fixed, if you privatise, all you're doing is getting less return on investment from the money that you actually get in the coffers because you got to pay it out to a broken system. So there's so much to do here, and it's being badly rushed. So my personal view is eventually I would like to see some private capital in the Big Bash because I think it would be good for the game. But it would come with, my personal view is it would come with provisos. I would limit IPL ownership potentially to zero, but I could maybe live.
Can you do that?
With them. Why not? There's lots of people who are going to buy these assets. So maybe, but at worst, I don't know. You could maybe live, and I haven't thought about where my threshold is. Maybe the Thunder and the Renegades go to IPL teams. No other IPL teams can invest in the league. I don't know. And that would definitely maximise price for those two teams. Can you let the states not sell, which was part of, you know, reported South Australia's kind of view? Maybe some states want to sell, maybe some don't. I don't know. But in actual fact, what needs to happen is, rather than this is what's happening and you either say yes or no, is a bit more thoughtfulness around how that can come about and when. And I think ultimately people should be doing what's best for Australian cricket, and I think we'll get there.
Yeah. It feels to me like, you know, pump the brakes. If there's so much to work out in such a small period of time, then kick the timelines out. I don't know. It feels to me like there's a lot to sort out in a short period of time. The other thing is, when you talk about the IPLs, isn't that bad for, like, relations too? Like, how does that go down with the BCCI if you say, hey, you got all these owners and stuff that are, you know, your business partners, and we're basically saying, hey, we want to go private, but we don't want to go private with your guys. Like, what's the BCCI going to think about that if Cricket Australia is trying to basically freeze them out of their league? Like, doesn't that cause tension between the two bodies?
Potentially. But, you know, what else would cause tension is the Big Bash rights being far greater than international cricket rights because the BCCI have so much power now and they kill international cricket. And so your distributions to the states, instead of going to the states, go to private investors. So there's trade-off. Everything here has a trade-off.
Yeah.
There's some good outcomes. There's some bad outcomes. Nothing is going to be perfect. This is not a simple thing to pull off.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing that you need to think of, and this is top of mind for me in the US at the moment, which is at the forefront of, you know, the world of AI and, you know, efficiency around the workforce. If Cricket Australia can't find $20 to $30 million of saved costs by actually thinking about what their business should look like from the ground up and reimagining that, I'm a very poor judge. So in the short term, if it's this year and next year and you increase revenue and decrease costs, you can do a little mini reset perhaps and then get to a position where you work out the MOU and work out some other issues before you sell it in 28 or 29 or whatever that is. So you're right. The brakes, yeah, it's like a train has to keep moving down the tracks. And I personally, it doesn't feel comfortable for me at this point in time.
Do you have a feel as to what's going to happen?
I don't, because there's lots of voices and, you know, there's lots of different stakeholders.
I mean, the thing that'll probably resonate more for the everyday cricket fan is like, yeah, what it means for the window, you know, is the Boxing Day test going to have to move down the track, the New Year's test, where does it leave test cricket in the calendar if all of a sudden everything's centered around the Big Bash? So I think that is probably the one thing that, you know, the everyday person on the street probably thinks, how's this going to look and what's it going to look like going forward? And I think once they get to a point the decision's made, all these things should be clear, shouldn't they? Like, it shouldn't be like, oh, we'll wait and see what that looks like. Like, there should be a very clear outline. This is what we're going to do. This is what it's going to look like. These are the benefits for it. And at the moment, it feels like, hey, if we tip resources in that direction, we're worried about what it's going to do to this thing over there, or we'll have to wait and see. Like, it just feels like there's so much to work through in such a short period of time that...
You're right.
Yeah.
It's the biggest decision cricket will make, and yet everyone's dealing with limited information and compressed timelines. Like, that doesn't make sense.
Don't like it. Not to say I won't like it eventually, and I don't think it's a good idea.
You know what? I love the ambition. For too long, cricket has been unambitious. I love the fact that we're thinking globally. I love the fact that we're thinking big, and that the Big Bash should be the biggest show in town in January. It's just a question of how and when, and you know, and what you're willing to give up to do it.
Teddy, good hit out. That's great. I always love when you talk about these issues. As you said, this is what you do every day. Has anyone from Cricket Australia asked you about what you think about this, by the way?
Briefly a while ago.
Okay. Yeah. It. I don't know. I get lots of feedback whenever we discuss it. People love hearing your insights on it. It's a world that probably most of us don't knock around in every day. So, it gives us a great lens on what's going on. Thanks for taking some time out of your Sunday night in New York. Teddy, I will chat to you again next week. And by then, we may have crowned a Sheffield Shield champion. So we'll see where that leaves us in a week's time.
Wait. Thanks, Corb. Loved it.